From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. On Thursday, a group of computer coders launched Dark Wallet. It's software for people who use a popular online digital currency called bitcoins, and it lets them cloak all their transactions, making their money trail nearly untraceable. It's free, available now, and unregulated. You can use it to buy a sandwich or hide funding for a terror attack. We'll talk to one of the creators of Dark Wallet. This hour on Point, Bitcoin Dark Wallet, the trade-offs between privacy and criminality, and the future of online currencies. You can join us on air or online. Should we enable so much privacy that a person can buy drugs, guns, fund terrorists without leaving a trail? Can you imagine a world where every transaction is absolutely private? And do you think that's where we're headed? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York is Andy Greenberg. He is technology reporter for Wired magazine and author of The Machine Kills Secrets, How WikiLeakers, Cypherpunks, and Hacktivists Aim to Free the World's Information. You can link to his recent article, Dark Wallet is About to Make Bitcoin Money Laundering Easier Than Ever. It's on our website at onpointradio.org. Andy, hi.
Hi, Jessica.
Thanks for being with us. I'd like to ask you to explain what is Dark Wallet, but can you explain it in the most basic terms that a person who just has simple word processing skills could understand?
Well, the creators of Dark Wallet have been pretty clear about it. One of them describes it as money laundering software. But I think first it's necessary to understand Bitcoin. Bitcoin is this decentralized digital currency that's not controlled by any bank or government. And the thing about Bitcoin is that you don't, by default, have to attach your identity to it, but you have to spend it in very, very careful ways to not reveal your identity in its use. What Dark Wallet does, and it's a piece of software essentially created by this radical libertarian and anarchist group. What Dark Wallet does is kind of mix up Bitcoins and protect the users of it so that they have the kind of truly anonymous and untraceable properties that many people really want Bitcoin to have. So essentially, it's a way to spend money without any kind of identifying details, and it's sort of the perfect tool for black markets and other sort of highly private transactions.
So you're smart to take us to the basics of Bitcoins. They're the foundation of the economy that uses Dark Wallet. Will you explain what is the benefit of using Bitcoins instead of regular money or money you have through a credit card company for online transactions?
Well, you know, lots of people who see Bitcoin as a kind of better, newer PayPal point out that it has lower transaction costs and that there's no third party that controls your money. You can send Bitcoins directly from your wallet on your computer to anyone else's wallet anywhere else on the network. But there's also this other property of Bitcoin that, unlike PayPal, you don't have to give any kind of identifying details necessarily when you acquire Bitcoins. So you can spend it anonymously if you're careful. And that's why it's been used, for instance, on the Silk Road, this $100 million or billion-dollar drug marketplace that was shut down by the FBI in October of last year.
So Bitcoin is often used or we've seen it used for illegal activities.
We have, in fact. But it's never quite been the perfectly anonymous digital currency that people who buy drugs and guns with it have wanted it to be. But Dark Wallet could, in fact, make it that untraceable currency.
So what is the problem that Dark Wallet solves?
Right. Well, Bitcoin, might sound a little bit technical, but the way that Bitcoin works, there's this thing called the blockchain. And that's actually a public ledger of every Bitcoin transactions. Anyone can go look at the blockchain at any moment and see how Bitcoins are being spent. That's actually why Bitcoin works, because you can look at the blockchain to make sure that there's no forgery or fraud or counterfeiting of Bitcoins. But the same tool allows anybody to track every transaction that's happening in the Bitcoin network. So although you might not know who's spending the money, in many cases you do know who is spending the money, you can always see where it's being spent.
So
what Dark Wallet
Dark
Wallet takes another step, which is to mix up transactions as they're happening. So when one Dark Wallet user wants to spend money, it links up his or her transaction with another Dark Wallet user, and the coins kind of all fly through the air at the same time so that it's unclear, you know, whose coins went where. And over time, those combinations, what they call it is coin join, those coin join transactions make tracing a single Bitcoin more and more difficult until it's nearly impossible.
So the way Dark Wallet chops up transactions and combines them with other people's transactions, it kind of reminds me of the way mortgage-backed securities were sliced and diced. It's so mixed up with other people's that you can't trace out where it began. Is that correct?
Well, that's certainly the intention. And there's also other protections in Dark Wallet, something called a stealth address, so that you can receive Bitcoins anonymously as well. And what this is meant to add up to is a way to basically make Bitcoin untraceable.
How fringy is this world? Are Bitcoins in use among people who are just shopping for, I don't know, electronics? Or is it really just on the black market?
Oh, Bitcoin is absolutely something that's being used on the white market as well now. Overstock.com, the technology e-commerce site Tiger Direct, accept Bitcoin, and more brick-and-mortar stores accept Bitcoin as well. What Cody Wilson and the group Unsystem that's created Dark Wallet want to do is to kind of carve out a space within Bitcoin where it can still be used for the black market purposes that I think were one of the original uses of Bitcoin. The Silk Road, this giant drug bazaar, was one of the first sites to really create a real Bitcoin business. And Unsystem wants to bring Bitcoin back to those kind of anarchic roots.
So you mentioned Cody Wilson. He's one of the creators of Dark Wallet. I believe he's a 26-year-old Arkansas native. And listeners might remember him as the guy who made headlines after he used a 3D printer to make a handgun and then posted the blueprints online. Andy, would you give us a little bit of background on Cody?
Right. Well, Cody did create the first 3D printed gun that anyone could download and essentially print with a click in their garage. It was meant to be a gun that violates all, or rather circumvents, makes obsolete all gun regulations. And I think that this is Cody's project in general, is to kind of render the governments obsolete. You know, he wants to show that we're entering a new technological era where a piece of software can really evade all regulation, not simply violate it, but just go around it and make the government almost fade away in its relevance.
Well, I'd like to bring in Cody because it's no point in talking about him when we actually have him here on the phone. Joining me now from Little Rock, Arkansas, is Cody Wilson. He's founder of Defense Distributed. It's a nonprofit that, as we mentioned, has published gun designs suitable for 3D printing. He's also a member of the group of computer coders called Unsystem. They just launched Dark Wallet, an anti-government software that makes digital currency transactions nearly untraceable. Cody, hi. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, it's a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So tell us why you want the world to have Dark Wallet.
Well, I mean, in the short strokes, we see a certain kind of assault on anonymity as a human capacity. And we have a certain romance with Bitcoin. And we're watching, in our point of view, we're watching a certain counter-revolution happening in Bitcoin where everyone's trying to throw out all the features which we think make it so interesting and great and kind of paradigm-busting. So I didn't really see anyone taking a strong position on Bitcoin as an anarchist's tool. So a group of anarchists and I in Spain and around the world basically wanted to prop back up the anonymity and privacy-based features of Bitcoin toward, I mean, basically swinging the balance toward the user who uses Bitcoin against a surveillance state.
Cody, where do you see this leading us eventually? Do you envision an economy, an entire economy that's beyond the government's reach?
I don't know. I mean, because I guess it depends on what we mean by that. But black markets are, of course, essential to human action from time immemorial. I mean, hiding your wealth, your assets, some of your activity from sovereign states it's a time-honored tradition. So honestly, I really think that there weren't people who were strongly advocating for these features of Bitcoin. And we had only kind of seen them nascently suggested in the original Bitcoin protocol, those that are like Bitcoin toward anonymity. We didn't have it. We had something like pseudonymity in Bitcoin. And I would still say that Dark Wallet doesn't get us there. And we weren't trying by this product to then say, all right, now we've reached the finish line. And now if you use this one product or this one, you know, piece of software, we've achieved anonymity. No, we wanted to suggest an alternative way of doing Bitcoin pieces of core software which could be integrated into everyone's Bitcoin going forward in an antithetical way to the way that the state and other corporations had suggested Bitcoin would be traced or integrated into the system.
I imagine the federal government's paying pretty close attention to what you're doing. Any indication they're watching Dark Wallet?
I mean, one should assume. Though the Wall Street Journal told me FinCEN was aware, and I'm sure New York Department of Financial Services is aware as well. But I think we've posed the challenge to them in an interesting way in this open source context where developers can just at their whim integrate pieces of this software into what they do. I think the people that should be worried are the people who've kind of already gone over the line and adopted the regulatory model for their business, their official, you know, enfranchised business with their reporting requirements and, you know, their licenses. We want the common Bitcoin user to be able to use this software free of encumbrance.
And you're saying, just to clarify that briefly, you're saying that people can download it in a way that they're not necessarily watched?
I can't assure that. I mean, if Snowden taught us anything, it's that pretty much everything is tapped and watched all the time. But this would be good Bitcoin hygiene, and I suggest people experiment with it.
This is On Point. I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the launch of Dark Wallet, which makes Bitcoin transactions nearly untraceable, and what it will mean for the future of online currencies. We're talking now with Cody Wilson, who is part of a group of coders called Unsystem. They just launched Dark Wallet, software that protects the identities of people who use Bitcoins. And also with us is Andy Greenberg, technology reporter for Wired Magazine. Andy, I want to get back to basics on this. For people who aren't familiar with Bitcoin still, how can regular people who aren't computer experts take advantage of Bitcoins and Dark Wallet?
I think Dark Wallet can be downloaded at darkwallet.is at any time. And then you can go to, you know, a Bitcoin exchange or a service like Coinbase and just buy Bitcoins. The thing is that if you use Coinbase, for instance, you probably will have to give up some identifying details. And those coins would be traced to your identity pretty easily. So instead, you buy Bitcoins from Coinbase and then you can send them to your Dark Wallet address, essentially. And that's at the point at which you could spend them anonymously instead. That seems to be the trick, is that once you've moved Bitcoins from your sort of identified address to this anonymous Dark Wallet address, they take that step into kind of untraceability.
And Andy, do people who use Bitcoins necessarily use them for shady activities? If I were to go buy some, would that mean the government would be curious about start watching me?
Well, no, I want to be clear that Bitcoin is used for, like I said earlier, for all kinds of legal activities as well. And I also want to point out again that the Bitcoin presents this kind of dilemma. If you use Bitcoin without any extra protections, it's in fact much more public in some ways. People think that it's anonymous by default, but it's not. It's actually very traceable. Anyone who looks at this Bitcoin blockchain ledger of transactions can see how people are spending money. Google can look at that. The NSA can look at that. So you have to choose between a kind of naked Bitcoin that is actually very public or a protected Bitcoin with something like Dark Wallet that may be, you know, kind of controversially private, in fact, very secret.
So just again, to be clear, with Bitcoins, there's a computer footprint of every move you make unless you cloak it with something like Dark Wallet.
That's right. As Cody said, there's a kind of pseudonymity. You don't necessarily know who is spending the money, but you know how it's being spent. And with some tricks or some subpoenas to a couple of companies that sold Bitcoins, you can easily figure out who those pseudonyms are, you know, who is the person behind that Bitcoin address. And once you've done that, you can actually see everywhere that they've spent money. And that seems to me to actually be a kind of dangerous level of transparency. So, you know, we have to choose between the Scylla and Charybdis of radical transparency or radical privacy.
Cody Wilson, one of the creators of Dark Wallet, is with us. Cody, before I go to you, I want to play for a moment a piece of the video you made about the potential of Dark Wallet. It was posted in October to YouTube.
There's a system approaching perfection, just in time for our disappearance. So, let there be dark.
Let There Be Dark. It's good marketing. It sounds mysterious. What's been the response to the launch? Have a lot of people downloaded Dark Wallet?
You know, we don't have hard numbers on that. I think we've all agreed it's something, been a few thousand. A lot of developers have started and are keeping their eyes on it. But thank you for playing that video clip, by the way. Always a showman, Mr. Wilson.
A little humor, yes?
Basically, we wanted to really suggest to people that we were willing to fight for the political future of Bitcoin. So something like 10,000 people donated to that, to the our fundraiser, and saw that video. And I think the video now has passed 100,000 views. I mean, there's a large constituency in Bitcoin which felt unrepresented, especially through the summer of 2013, as the legitimists kind of, you know, descended into the valley from the east and the west coast to kind of make it into proper software and proper business. These people wanted – there's a certain cottage privacy industry after Mr. Snowden, and this is true of Bitcoin as well. So we were telling people, look, no, we see a private Bitcoin, and we want to head these regulators off at the pass. And I can really talk about what we mean by that if you'd like, and what the strategy – I think the big picture strategy of Dark Wallet is.
Please tell us – you know what? For a moment, will you pause for one moment? I want to take a call. Troy is calling from Savannah, Georgia. Hi, Troy. You're on the air.
Hi, Jessica. I just wanted to express my interest and support for Dark Wallet. I've never used Bitcoin personally, but I'm very interested in having the ability to privately exchange monies. I don't feel that it's anybody's business what money I earn or how I spend my money, and I don't feel that I need the government or anybody else to decide what their share of that is or what their interests are. I have a question for your guest. My question is, how is Dark Wallet going to be better protected than Bitcoin for subversion from government agencies, from trying to erode it and disable it by modifying the way that it works? Some of that, I understand, is happening with Bitcoin now. What is going to protect Dark Wallet differently? Thank you.
Thanks, Troy, for the call. Do you want to take a crack at that, Cody? Both explaining
yeah, sure.
how it evades tracking, and also what your strategy is.
Yeah. My sympathies, Troy. All right, keep up the struggle, buddy. Basically, I think that I'm seeing in the question a suggestion that Bitcoin is somehow an alternative to Dark Wallet, or Dark Wallet is somehow an alternative to Bitcoin. Again, Dark Wallet is a way of running a Bitcoin wallet, a way of handling your Bitcoin. So just to kind of set that out at the beginning, there's no guarantees, by the way, that a middleman can't get in and run, let's say, an Obelisk server, or get in between you and your browser with some malware, or get in between you and someone else on a transaction, or be, let's say, a dummy agent trying to analyze the transaction graph around the addresses that they've kind of localized around your identity. I mean, there's no guarantees here. And in fact, this software is in its alpha stage for those listening. So it's really at an experimental kind of public evaluation stage. I wouldn't recommend everyone just immediately put all their money into it. In fact, don't do that. But this, again, is a first step in an integration of some software that's been talked about for a while but hasn't actually been implemented and kind of used. So I would caution anyone from thinking this is some kind of solution, full stop, to the surveillance problems that we all recognize. But again, it's a kind of initiation. It's a step forward into this darkest Bitcoin.
Are you, Cody, worried about what Dark Wallet could be used for? I mean, we know it could be used for innocuous things and to trade also things like drugs. But it could also be used potentially to fund even terror groups and terror attacks. Are you concerned at all about that sort of thing?
I think this is true. I mean, the market cap of Bitcoin is pretty small when we think about it. There isn't really a huge ecosystem here that would actually facilitate transactions in the millions of dollars that would not be seen as noteworthy events to those looking at Bitcoin. So again, I think the traditional money laundering techniques and traditional banking institutions are still the havens of rogue states and terror actors. But no question, anonymity allows these heinous capacities and these heinous decisions. Again, to be serious, as a civil libertarian, as an anarchist, we say that it's still worth it to have the ability to transact anonymously. In fact, we lean into this uncomfortable, this disquieting future, one of darkness, one of, you know, I mean, this is a way of baiting the regulatory state into its own kind of projected nightmare scenarios that it constantly beats us over the head with.
But are you
also, we embrace the dark.
Are you also potentially baiting the regulatory state into regulating you or regulating Bitcoins?
And this will allow me to loop it back to, I think, to our overall strategy. We're already seeing that happen. And what's so sad is that, especially in the past 12 months, even the luminaries of Bitcoin, and I'm thinking of Charlie Shrim here, one of the former vice presidents of the Bitcoin Foundation, the people who were Bitcoin's best evangelists jumped feet first into conversations with regulators like Ben Lasky of New York Department of Finance, Department of Financial Services, and promoted and suggested ways of licensing Bitcoin activity and observing it and analyzing transaction graphs. I mean, we are our own worst enemy in that regard. So what we were seeing was an ecosystem which was going to be slowly imposed on us either way, one of validated identities, green-listed addresses, and regulated businesses, bit-licensed businesses, which could only do business, let's say, or with its reporting requirements or know-your-customer rules, which could only do business with green-listed identities. I mean, we were already being marginalized, we, the privacy conscious. So, I mean, it's about kind of beating these people to the punch before there's clear regulatory guidance, as far as I'm concerned, in the United States, or at least forcing the crisis in the United States. You can either accept a totally whitewashed and unworkable Bitcoin, kind of throttled, if you will, or a Bitcoin blockchain, which has black market transactions mixed in with the white market ones.
Let's take a call from Michelle. She's calling from Westmount, Quebec, Canada. Hi, Michelle. You're on the air.
Hi, Jessica. I just want to say buyer beware and payer beware. Whether or not it's governed by regulatory bodies or not, ignorance is no excuse for breaking the law. And if people understand what happens when you have a seizure or your bank accounts are frozen or your assets are seized and forfeited, then you understand the process and the legal process and the lawyer fees and not having access to your money, and suddenly you're in a mess that you never intended to be in. And so you could accidentally get involved with the wrong transaction, with the wrong people, and you're in a very bad place financially. So I see a progression of the discussion from one in which you're really being encouraged to participate and it's private, et cetera, et cetera. All these ideals are beautiful, but the reality is you get caught doing something wrong, you have to pay the price. So I want people to understand what happens when consumers get involved in transactions they don't understand, but they want to be private. Private transactions become very public when you're arrested for being involved in some kind of transaction that includes people who are not the kind of people you want to be involved with.
Michelle, thank you for the call. I think this would be a good time to bring in Juan Zarate. He's in Washington and he's senior advisor at the Transnational Threats Project and Homeland Security and Counterterrorism Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He was also Deputy Assistant to the President and Deputy National Security Advisor for Combating Terrorism from 2005 to 2009. Juan was also the first ever Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Terrorist Financing and Financial Crimes. He's author of Treasury's War, The Unleashing of a New Era of Financial Warfare. He consults with groups who are in the digital currency industry on compliance issues. Juan, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Jessica. Thanks for having me.
So, an interesting conversation. Dark Wallet, this new software, makes it even easier to obscure already cloaked online transactions. You heard our caller really give a warning to users, saying if you use Dark Wallet, law enforcement could come after you. Is that really a one-to-one?
Well, Jessica, I think it's been an interesting conversation. I do think your caller raises some very good points. I think there's no question there's tension here. There's tension between the desire for anonymity and privacy in the context of financial transactions and what has been at the heart of the anti-money laundering system, frankly, since the 1970s and certainly amplified after 9/11 with the concerns about terrorist financing, with transparency, knowing your customer, knowing the source of funds and where funds are headed. In the classic traditional financial system. But I do think, you know, Dark Wallet seems to present a real challenge here. And I think Cody is right to suggest that it's a challenge to the regulatory state or the current state of play. But I do think it's a challenge to the very notion of being able to not only have an understanding of how these transactions work to avoid terrorism, to avoid money laundering, child exploitation, pornography, proliferation, organized crime, the full gamut of things you worry about with respect to illicit capital flowing through the financial system. There are those concerns, but there are just the basic concerns around fraud and counterfeit, which are inherent in this ecosystem as well. I mean, you saw the problem with Mt. Gox, which was one of these Bitcoin exchange houses that was hacked and has had to deal with the loss of hundreds of millions of dollars worth of value because there was no transparency, because there was no check on their systems. And so I do think there's a real caution here, and Cody used the word caution, but I would caution in a different way. Caution both in terms of the fraud and counterfeit risks that are inherent in any sort of transaction of this sort, especially those that aren't regulated. And secondly, commingling your activities with actors who may very well want to hide their activities because precisely they're involved in criminality. And certainly, to your caller's point, that is going to attract a lot of attention, just like the Silk Road Network did, just like the Liberty Reserve Network did. And so law enforcement regulators are certainly watching this space carefully and are going to be concerned with any space that markets itself as as money laundering software.
So, Juan, that's an interesting idea you raise. Because the transactions are mingled with other people's, could you foresee a time when you're charged as a conspirator to a crime if your transaction, which was legal, is commingled with someone else's transaction that was illegal?
Well, I think every case will be different, obviously, and there depends on the statutes you're talking about, the intent and the facts of the case. But I do think there's a real challenge here, and especially if it's sort of openly and notoriously known that a particular type of software or exchange house or something is purposely trying to evade scrutiny, like the Silk Road case, like the Liberty Reserve case, then you're going to fall under immediate suspicion if you're imputed with that knowledge, imputed with the intent of trying to hide your transactions and to engage in illicit conduct as a result. I don't think the government is out to try to regulate users. And in fact, the regulation that's been put out by the U.S. Treasury, FinCEN, which has talked about virtual currency, is not intended for the users, but instead the administrators and exchangers. And so the government, I don't think, is worried about the one-to-one transactions. I think they're worried about those exchangers that are facilitating these kinds of offerings. And that's precisely why they named the Liberty Reserve website and operation as a primary money laundering concern. And if these are operations and technologies that are purposely set up to facilitate, the dark markets and illicit activity, that may be inherently a primary money laundering concern outright. And I think Cody's right. He's challenging the system, but the system's going to push back.
Cody, in just a couple, if you can be brief, do you expect a battle over this? Do you expect regulators to come in?
I don't know. I don't know what that vector of attack looks like. So, we were trying to just create good software that could be kind of integrated into the way other people are doing things.
And what did you call it? The vector of attack?
I
love it.
Thank you.
Yes. So you don't know what to expect?
I don't.
This is On Point. I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the launch of Dark Wallet and what it will mean for the future of online currencies. We're talking now with Cody Wilson, who is part of a collective of coders called Unsystem. They just launched Dark Wallet, software that protects the identities of people who use the digital currency called Bitcoin. And with Andy Greenberg, technology reporter for Wired Magazine. Also with us is Juan Zarate, Deputy Assistant to the President and Deputy National Security Advisor for Combating Terrorism from 2005 to 2009. Gentlemen, we're going to continue the conversation. I want to take some comments from our website. Just let you know, people are writing in with all sorts of opinions. Jacob says, the invention of Dark Wallet changes nothing. Criminals will always morph with new technology, and it's the government's job to keep up. Scott B. says, he thinks by making the money untraceable, you'll only bring about the wrath of government, who can make it miserable for everyone, including businesses that use Bitcoin. And BHA in Vermont says, I have no interest in a currency that changes value daily relative to real currency. I think that's referring to the extreme volatility of bitcoins. They can be worth a lot one day and a lot less the next. Let's go to you, Andy, for a moment. You've written quite a bit about Dark Wallet. What's been the reaction to both the launch of Dark Wallet and your articles?
Well, I think there's been giant interest. I mean, I have to say that there is absolutely a part of the Bitcoin community that wants to use it for black market purposes. I read the forums where people are discussing about how to buy drugs with Bitcoins, and they are excited about the creation of Dark Wallet, along with a few other projects. I mean, I should be clear that Dark Wallet is not alone in this regard. There are projects like Darkcoin and Zerocoin. There are even features in existing Bitcoin wallets that allow similar kinds of mixing and laundering of Bitcoins. These features exist. There are people who want to use them to buy contraband.
And has there been suspicion that Cody is actually trying to undo Bitcoin?
Well, of course, there are people in the comments section saying, you know, Cody is an agent provocateur. I think that that's what we've heard about every radical. We heard that about Julian Assange just as often before he proved that he really was out to leak the government's secrets. You know, I have spent a lot of time with Cody, and I kind of I trust that he's not actually trying to undermine Bitcoin.
Cody, you're here with us. Are you trying to undermine Bitcoin?
You know, actually, I think a way of doing Bitcoin or a way of thinking about Bitcoin, I certainly am trying to undermine. And as Charlie Shum would help me corroborate, if it is the government's intention to throttle Bitcoin, if it can't, yield itself to neat reporting requirements and, crystal clear, like, purity of transparency of transactions, then yes, Bitcoin isn't for people in the United States. And it's a global technology, and, we'll miss out on it. But forcing the hand this way is something I'm interested in doing.
Do you see yourself as aligned with Edward Snowden, the man who leaked NSA secrets?
You know, I haven't been able to kind of glean anything of Mr. Snowden's mind, but I certainly support what he did and is at least stated reasons for why he did it. I think that was a tremendous act and something rather heroic.
Juan Zarate, I want to ask you, some people who have gotten involved in creating online currency markets have gotten into trouble with the law. If illegal goods end up being traded using Dark Wallet, should the creators of the software be held legally responsible?
Well, Jessica, I'm not in a position to sort of opine on that, but certainly you've seen in past cases where those who are running the actual exchange operations or the sites who are, purposely facilitating the illicit activity, and Andy is right. There's an element of this community that really does want to use the anonymity and the ability to use virtual currency to transact in all sorts of nefarious and illegal things openly, right? And so that's to the extent that people are purposely facilitating that. That is potentially a criminal act. I'm not going to opine on that in a particular case, but that certainly is a potential liability. But more importantly, Jessica, I think, one of the things to keep in mind is that this debate is happening globally as to what virtual currencies are, how they're going to be treated. And frankly, it's in the U.S. that you have the most measured debate, because I don't think anyone, especially if you listen to the U.S. government, nobody is talking about throttling the technology itself. In fact, there's a view that this is an important innovation in terms of payment efficiency, something the Federal Reserve has talked about. There's discussion certainly around how to better regulate it, both for purposes of fraud and customer protection and investor protection. And there's also then the concerns over how you ensure some degree of transparency so that this isn't sort of relegated to the dark alleys of the virtual economy and instead allows at least some traceability so that people can't use this, whether it's for small transactions or large ones, for illicit purposes. And I think, this debate is a global one. And frankly, if it gets moved offshore, but either the technology and services or the debate itself, I think the technologists and the sort of the maximalists and the anarchists are not going to like what they see in places like China and Russia, which are already doing everything possible to actually make it illegal or very difficult to transact in this economy. And so I would say it's in the U.S. actually you're going to have the most balanced debate, because it's here that you're going to see a receptivity to the very innovations that I think the founders of Bitcoin really wanted to see. It's in the context of this anonymity and in this notion of a maximalist romantic version of anonymity that you're going to see a lot of tension, and you're going to see problems because people are going to use it for illegal purposes, and that's where the government's going to be concerned.
when you talk about using these currency and a marketplace for illegal purposes, it's not only the new software that is allowing that to happen. In an interview with the BBC in February, Amir Taki, who was along with Cody Wilson, a creator of Dark Wallet, was asked if he's concerned that bitcoins could be used for criminal activity. And Taki pointed out that mainstream institutions are also involved in the dark economy.
The whole basis of the Western democracy is the whole idea of the free thought, that everybody can transact with anybody regardless of like race, religion, gender, you know, class. And we don't live in a situation now where, like, look at HSBC. They're one of the biggest money launderers funding cartels in Mexico. The banking system is corrupt.
The existing banking system is corrupt, he says. That's what Takei says. Last summer, a U.S. district judge in Brooklyn, in fact, approved a $1.9 billion fine for HSBC to resolve charges that it enabled a Latin American cartel to launder billions of dollars. So, Cody, I imagine your point is, you don't have to use the dark economy to, if you want to make illegal transactions, it's not inherently corrupt.
All right. Yeah, I don't try to lean on this, but I mean, Matt Taibbi's reporting is good. The Economist's reporting is good on this. HSBC, Standard Chartered, UBS, these people are involved in some of the most fantastic and enormous, you know, financial scandals of all time. We're talking about billions and trillions of dollars of manipulation here rather than the kind of paltry millions that might be able to be filtered through Bitcoin one day. Right. I mean, the point is worth repeating, though, isn't it?
And Juan, is there a difference, though? You can regulate what happens at a bank like HSBC.
Well, absolutely. Regulate and hold accountable. I mean, the very fact that these banks, some of which are even threatened with not being able to do business in the U.S. ultimately if they don't rectify the problems, is a case in point. It's not just the amount of the fines, which have started to become astronomical, whether it's U.S. banks or foreign banks, but it's also the fact that they have their own reputation and access to the U.S. system at risk. And that's enormous. I mean, that's incredibly painful and powerful. And these are regulated entities. They have requirements in terms of reporting. To the extent that they fail or are colluding or engage in some criminality, they can be held accountable. And I don't think anyone here is suggesting that the current system is perfect in stopping all illicit finance. The problem is, are you creating a new avenue that is intentionally providing a dark alley through which these illicit activities can happen? That seems to be part of the purpose of this.
I think I can jump on that if you'd allow me.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. There seems to be something of like, I don't know, a romanticism in reverse, like banks as ideal social institutions in our civic society. Oh, well, they promote stability and permanence somehow, so therefore they should be preserved at all costs. I think I remember the Department of Justice wouldn't revoke HSBC's license in the United States because, again, it was one of these too big to fail banks. Well, I mean, this is ideology. This idea of like, well, there's a financial system of stable, permanent institutions. I mean, we are looking at a way of cracking that, not just that facade of thought, but actually busting those institutions. We really do want to overcome these banking cartels and the cartelization of industry and of the professions and of this kind of managerialist fantasy that with regulators and bureaucrats we can kind of administer their perfect civil institutions. I mean, it's something we're directly at odds with. So I'm hoping that we can seriously undermine the way we even think about banks as the way we even do finance.
Cody, do you think of yourself as an anarchist?
I mean, yes. If I have to adopt a politics, yes, it's anarchistic in the main, and that it's anti-state. I just am extremely suspicious of state institutions and their self-justifications.
William is calling from New Orleans, Louisiana. Hi, William. What's your comment?
Hey, Jessica. I have a question as regards moral and social responsibilities. I'm not against digital currency being developed. It's a responsible digital currency. But when you look at Black Wallet and Bitcoin with anonymous transactions where people pay no taxes and people can break the law without having any social implications, I don't see how that sustains a society. Did our speaker, did our panelists go to public school? Does he use health care? Does he use our public roads? He is admitted to be an anarchist. Does he not believe that these functions will be provided just because people want to? There has to be some regulation, some responsibility in our citizens. And these two systems, Bitcoin and Dark Wallet, are not allowing that to happen.
Thank you for your call, William. Cody?
I've engaged with this kind of logic on the gun issue as well. You know, I think this is a way of seeing the world in one dimension, which is very largely like there are received wisdom. Well, I mean, who will build the roads, as Amir often asks? I mean, paint the picture in reverse with a stable of institutions where we can only put our money in banks. I mean, I see these capital controls like in Greece, bail-ins, bailouts, asset seizures. I see a whole class of abuses of power that are constantly and thoroughly exercised upon us all the time. And with, you know, out the left side of our mouth, we bemoan Wall Street, and out the right side of our mouth, all good NPR liberal progressives say like, well, too big to fail. I mean, this is cognitive dissonance. And you can't blame the tiny anarchist trying to overcome that system with what is largely just a totally corrupt, I mean, thoroughly, thoroughly corrupt institutional framework.
Andy, can transactions used in dark wallet be taxed, or can income earned in dark wallet be taxed?
I don't think so, unless someone decides to declare it. I mean, you can always put it on your tax return, but I don't know why you would need to if there's no way that the government can figure out whose money it is.
And how about Bitcoin? Could that be taxed more easily?
I think so. I mean, if you are making a lot of money in Bitcoin and you don't declare it, I think that the government, no doubt, sooner or later, the IRS will start looking at the blockchain, looking at these massive collections of Bitcoins held by a pseudonym. And then it only takes a couple of subpoenas to a service like Coinbase or some other exchange to figure out whose money that is. And then they come calling.
Let's take another call. Sherry is calling from Chesapeake, Virginia. Hi, Sherry. You're on the air.
Hi, Jessica. Yeah, I just want to say, if you want to create true anarchy in the financial system, then every transaction should be a matter of public record rather than being secretive. We would know where banks are financing, who they're financing, what they're doing. We'd know what CEOs are getting paid. We'd know, it would just be a total revolution within about 60 days if everybody's transactions were public.
Thank you, Sherry. Cody, it's a novel idea.
Oh, I actually agree with it, because if it was the law and was actually executable, everyone would immediately stop using banks. So, beautiful.
Juan.
Jessica, let me step in here.
Yes.
This is way overly simplistic view of not only the world, but just the world of finance. I mean, this notion of, you know, it's all the banks and it's all, you know, the financial system is simply built on the banks. I mean, there are all sorts of non-bank financial institutions, bartering arrangements, use of cash. I mean, the nature of the global economy is so diverse. Yes, the banks are incredibly important to it, and especially you talk about global trade, of course, very important. But this notion that, you know, you have this binary system, it's either, you know, these big banks controlling everything or the anonymous dark wallet users, you know, David versus Goliath. I mean, it's just a very simplistic view of the world. And in terms of transparency, I would say, you know, it's frankly the regulated banks, certainly that have fallen down and have been slapped with enormous sanctions, but also that have to reveal what they pay their CEO. They have their shareholder meetings. They have their filings. And in fact, one of the major tensions currently in the post-2008 crisis is precisely how you restrict this, how you gain better reporting, how you harmonize it across the transatlantic community. So, you know, this discussion we're having is a little bit simplistic in terms of the very nature of the system as it exists and, frankly, the innovation that needs to happen in the financial
community.
But, Juan,
you wouldn't agree there could be more transparency.
Oh, of course, of course. And I think that's where you have this debate. And I think where we're headed, though, is in the exact opposite direction with less transparency. I mean, this new technology we're talking about is not providing the transparency that we're talking about. It's the exact opposite.
Juan, there's been reports that this kind of Bitcoin currency could actually be very useful in third world developing countries down the road. Do you support the use of online currencies?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a use here. And I think the point that, you know, the payment system is perhaps too costly. The fact that it's too risky in some cases to deal, for example, with money remittance into conflict zones or between diaspora communities like the Somali American community, which has trouble both in the U.S. and the U.K. because they can't find the right financial relationships to be able to send money abroad. The advent of mobile banking in places like East Africa and South Asia, giving access to financial transactions, which has frankly liberated people to be able to engage in the economy in ways unforeseen. I mean, all of those innovations are important, and I think part of this debate has to be around, okay, how do these innovations help the economy as opposed to how do they hide transactions in the economy?
Cody,
I think that's the difference.
Cody, if I could just ask you to have the last word here, where would you like to see this take us?
I'd like to see a world apart, basically, a world where we grant that there's a total digital anonymity and black markets that are daily facilitated and outside of the reach of super status control and international and transnational control.
Cody Wilson, one of the creators of Dark Wallet, thank you for joining us. And Andy Greenberg, technology reporter for Wired Magazine, thank you. Juan Zarate, deputy assistant to the president and deputy national security advisor for combating terrorism from 2005 to 2009, thanks to all of you for your time and explanation of a complicated currency. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Coming up tomorrow, the NSA and the phone companies aren't the only ones vacuuming up your data. Who are they, and should you be worried? I'm Jessica Yellen. This is On Point.